Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we have news on Amazon buying up everything. Dark Universe gets a soft reboot, and our topic this week is cult movies. What does that even mean? We're going to discuss that. Let's get on with the show. Aaron Peterson, joining me today are my fellow hosts, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. This is our first, like, legit show of the year, and I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, I think it's the first one without 2019 in the title, right?
Yeah.
We should put 2019 cult movies. We're going to predict which movies are going to be cult movies in 10 years.
No, I'm we're down. Not.
Okay. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And a little later, we're going to talk to Bill Fulkerson, who's a documentary filmmaker as well as a fellow podcaster, about cult films. What are they? We're still undecided. This is one of the most popular topics we've ever posted in our Facebook group, and it feels like everybody has a different idea of what cult movie means. So we're going to talk to a professional and see what he says.
So really, he's coming here to tell us that we're wrong, and our opinions are irrelevant.
I don't think I'm wrong. I don't think John's wrong.
I think if he says you're wrong, you're wrong.
Yeah, there's that. But didn't someone like try to say The Lord of the Rings was a cult movie?
There are website articles that say that Harry Potter and what was the other one? There's another one that those are cult films. I'm like, that's not.
There's a cult that worships them, but that's not a cult film. I think that's a different thing that they're what?
Yep.
And there's by the way, if you're playing along, that's a shot because Amanda mentioned Harry Potter.
Oh my God. It was just because it was in the article. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it is. You know what?
I'm sure the only reason why you remembered it is because of Harry Potter.
That's actually probably true.
News article was any other franchise. And she's like, I can't remember what the name of that was. Let me look on IMDb right now during the podcast. Come on. All right. Let's get into movie news. We've got reboots coming from Resident Evil, Child's Play, and Starship Troopers as TV series. I got a question. It's not really revolving around those three specific properties, although why does Child's Play need to be a TV show? That's a whole nother topic. I want to know, do we even need, I mean, we talked about TV last week. There's 1,000 things that are already out there, 500 to be exact. Do we need more remakes on the small screen?
At this point, I'm already struggling to keep up with original content. I don't need rebooted or remade properties that are probably not going to give anything a new twist or give me something that's totally different than what I've gotten before. It's just in a television format now.
What if I'd like to know more?
I think we got plenty out of the other 12 Resident Evil movies.
I don't think she knows what I mean. You haven't seen Starship Troopers, have you?
No. I've seen clips. I've seen parts of it.
Maybe you're the audience. Not that one. Maybe you're the audience that they're playing
to. I don't think so.
Okay.
I want more creative stuff. Like Haunting of the Hill House. Haunting of Hill House. I threw my the in a different area. Those types of shows that are really creative, I understand that one's kind of a remake, but it put a different twist on it.
I was going to have to interject in there for a second to remind you that was a remake.
It is.
Thank you for doing it for me.
Million Little Things. That one was a different property that felt...
Is that a remake?
No.
Oh,
I'm saying that's something that's different. Gotcha. It gives me something unique. If you give me something unique or you remake it in a unique way, then I'm interested, but I don't trust it. I just don't trust it.
You know, playing devil's advocate on these titles, I get it. I'm not too disappointed in what they're doing. If they make it work, then they make it work, and that's great. Part of the problem that I think that people forget that companies and developers run into is the idea that when you put something new out there and it looks too much like something else, you will have somebody killing the credibility of it within seconds on the internet saying, well, that's too much like Walking Dead. Why are you doing this other zombie show that has... maybe like more action to it and less stupidity. But if they go ahead and they warm us up by saying it's a zombie show, but it's Resident Evil, then you avoid a lot of that tearing down because it's too much like something else.
Well, it's all about built-in branding. It's just a name because there's so much content. They're just trying to throw names out there that you're going to recognize. So you'll definitely check it out, even if you won't stick around. It's just to the point where I've already got too much of that already. I don't need any more. I'm nostalgia'd out. I have no more nostalgias.
These properties are doing a little bit of a smart move, I think, too, because they're pulling on things that could be done in a different way. Resident Evil, for example, people that were fans of the video game often hated the movies because it strayed so far from the storyline in the games.
Well, they're wrong. So I'm just letting you know. Those movies are hella fun. I don't care how close they are.
They're hella fun. You hear that?
Those games aren't that freaking detailed.
But that gives the opportunity for the television creators to spin that into something that's like what the original video game was going to, you know, should have, you know, how the transition should have been. So I can see how they know the audience they're grabbing for. They're not pulling, if that's how they do it, they're able to already secure all of those video game avid Resident Evil fans.
Yeah, unlike the ones that just bought that Resident Evil 2 game. That's totally new, but it's not. It's actually a remake of Resident Evil 2.
I heard it was fun, though.
But it's not new. That's my point.
Yeah, I gotcha.
It's a remake.
Kind of like this television show is going to be.
Wow, wow, wow. Maybe Alice will come back. Well, she wasn't in the game, right? There's no Alice in the game, if I remember right.
Maybe Flo will come back.
Really? Because only
but hey,
eight people got it.
Opening to move on.
There's only eight people that got it, and they're all 65 or older. All right, so let's move on because Amazon's making some moves. Apparently, they have all the money in the world, which of course they do. They got the Echoes and those things make money. So they paid $13 million for Late Night. It's a Sundance film or premiered at Sundance about a veteran late night talk show who's played by Emma Thompson, who feels the pressure that it might cost her job to a shinier shock comic. She tries to switch things out and modernize the show with several stunts that backfire. She also changes the all-male writer's room, adding the show's first female writer of Indian descent in Mindy Kaling, who also wrote the movie. Also, they then paid $14 million, because $1 million more, I assume because it's a dude, for Adam Driver's The Report.
Oh, you went there.
Which centers on Senate staffer Daniel Jones, played by Adam Driver, who's assigned the task of leading an investigation into the CIA's detention and interrogation program that the CIA adopted after 9/11. That's worth $14 million, apparently. My question is, Amazon, are they losing their mind trying to compete with Netflix, or are these actually solid deals?
It's hard to determine whether or not these are solid deals because we don't know what the outcome is. We don't know what the product is. But if they are great then and they're trying to compete with Netflix, then good. Competition breeds excellence. Back and forth between the two companies, go for it. I want to see what they keep on bringing us if they do this.
Look, after Jack Ryan, I'm okay with whatever they want to spend to
Come
make more
on.
Shows.
They've got one hit, two hits. They got
Marvelous.
That
lady.
Yes, they got two hits. Let's not get carried away that, well, they figured everything out.
I'm not saying they figured everything out. I'm not saying that they're Netflix, but I am saying that they are starting to show that they know what type of audience they have, what type of things to make. And these two properties right here that they've spent,
and they could be Oscar bait too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are properties that they know people are going to be interested in for the type of product it is, who they're involving in it, and the way that they're marketing it. They know what they're doing. This has made huge rounds in the news just because they spent this much money on it. Now they've already got free marketing just because they paid for these.
Well, that's is that free marketing when they paid like $27
million? But that's not out of their marketing budget. That's just out of the property budget.
I'm just saying that's still $27 million last time I checked.
But we're doing this for free now for them to talk about it because we're like, oh, $13, $14 million, that's so much money. And now they're like, let me kick up my shoes. Let me take them off, get my fuzzy socks on while you guys talk about it and spread the word of these two new shows that we just bought.
Why did you just make it so like housewifey?
Not shows, movies, but still.
Movies. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Same thing.
I mean, I got it. I just wanted to quickly just interject movies, not shows.
Especially my grandma. I got to go watch my shows. My show's on.
I am an old lady in my soul.
My novellas are on. I got to go watch them.
All right. Well, speaking of old time talk, Universal is rebooting its Dark Universe with its collection of classic monsters like the Wolfman and the Invisible Man and what are the other ones? Mummy, all those.
The Creature.
Yep, The Creature. There you go. By hiring Blumhouse and director Lee Whannell to handle a new Invisible Man, Peter Kramer, Universal's president of production, said in a statement, "We are excited to take a more individualized approach for their return to screen, shepherded by creators who have stories they are passionate to tell with them." So it sounds like they are more getting away from the Dark Universe, as it were, and doing a more of a DC Universe kind of aesthetic where they're taking them individually, one by one by one. Is that a better direction?
It's going to be tough to say until I actually see the properties. And I only know of a few of them, like a couple of
them.
Yeah, I don't know all of them. So it's tough for me to say it's going to be better this way than the other way.
Is your only experience with the Mummy, the Tom Cruise one? Because that's not fair.
No, 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 no. You know, you know that I'm a fan of the original Mummy.
I mean, but not the original Mummy.
Like the second original. The only one that matters to me.
The version of the Mummy.
That's fine, but it's the only one that matters to me. But of course, I loved that one. But, I'm familiar with The Invisible Man and The Mummy, and I feel like that's really the extent of my knowledge in terms of this universe. So I'm excited to see some things coming back, and I like – is it Blumhouse? I thought it was – is it Blumhouse?
Did I say Blumhouse?
I don't know what we've said.
Well, I mean, there's no E after it, so I'm going to go Blumhouse.
Okay. Well, that one. I like the content that I've seen them put out for other things. So it at least gives me some faith about them taking this on.
I have more faith with Lee Whannell than I do anything.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, okay. He did Upgrade. Remember, John, you saw Upgrade. Upgrade was great.
Yeah. Yep.
Did you not see it?
No, Upgrade was great. What was the other ones he did?
Saw?
I'm loose.
He did Saw?
He wrote it. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, well, I feel dumb now. Okay. Those are, I mean, that's two good ones. Now I'm on board for Lee, too. Hey, Lee. You've got my vote.
He's not listening.
He might be.
No, he's not.
You never
know. I promise you, he's busy making The Invisible Man and deciding whether or not to keep Johnny Depp in that role because he was originally cast. And apparently, all the original actors from the Dark Universe have the option to come back.
No way, really?
Yep.
That's kind of cool.
But it'll be low budget. It'll be like $10 million movies.
I like that they're keeping low budget.
It'll be cool. It's nice to see what they can do with low budgets.
It's way better than what they did with Cruz. I didn't actually think the Mummy with Cruz was bad. But Tom Cruise was the problem with the movie. So get away from big movie stars. Make something smaller. Get actors we don't know so we can disappear in the role. And that's where I think we should be landing. That's my two cents. I'm excited for this because I love those monsters. I love them. And I was so bummed when they killed it. Apparently, I'm the only one that was bummed. Okay. You can.
I didn't hear many people that were, after they saw the Mummy, there was nobody left on board for it.
Damn.
Like, just from what I heard, I didn't see the Cruise one.
I was in for it. I was able to separate my love for the Brendan Fraser Mummy and the original Mummy and this into letting it be its own thing. And I was interested to see how they were going to link the worlds together.
And now I get more. Oh, I finally get more. And you can find more of us. You can find reviews and share the show at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group. We're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. And you can also please leave a review of The Hollywood Outsider as you subscribe in your favorite app.
That was a great segue.
You like that?
I do.
I was waiting
right
for
off the
it.
Top of your, or you had it written down. You
no,
were
I was right off the top
ready
of my
to
hand.
Use it.
It's kind of off the top, man. All right, now we're going to go to, because we always do like a feature every week, or we do in a normal show, which we haven't had in about
in forever. So nobody's like, what's the format?
A month and a half. This time we're going to do, I Can't Believe We Thought That Was Cool. John, what are we going to talk about?
A lot of people might think this is weird for me to bring up because over the weekend, I happened to sit down and revisit with one of my old favorite movies, which was Chasing Amy. How did you guys like that movie?
I love that movie.
Love it.
That's when Kevin Smith was good.
Right. He was good. However, when you watch it in today's climate, you've got these two guys who are completely being bro-y about how lesbianism works. And they start explaining to the lesbian how lesbianism works. And after watching it this weekend, I can't believe it was just something that just sit wrong for me. Have you guys revisited it at all recently?
I watched it like a year, 6 months to a year ago. So fairly recently.
Did it sit different for you?
No, I still love it. I mean, I understand John's points, but I also have to understand that was the time, like in the 90s, I think that one came out.
Mm-hmm.
That's how people talked about that. That's how they dealt with things. Not to say that that's excusable or that it makes me feel fine.
I don't really know, like, what did they say that was so offensive now?
I don't know if it's offensive.
Because they were kind of idiots in the movie.
They're just stupid.
It's not like they were presented as intellectuals who are trying to explain lesbianism on a proper intellectual scale. I mean, they were dopes. So it came across as idiots talking idiotic.
I would also say bisexuality.
Instead of lesbianism?
Yeah.
What's the difference? Well, I guess there's a big difference. Never mind.
Well, no, the major focus is lesbianism until she falls for the guy, and then it becomes bisexuality.
Right, but it's still bisexual.
I mean, isn't the whole movie about how do you crack a lesbian? I mean, it's basically what they're the movie's supposed to be about, a guy thinking he can do that to a degree.
Yeah.
No, actually, you're wrong. The movie is actually about a guy who can't cope with the fact that the girl he's with experienced more of a sexual life than he did.
You know what made me uncomfortable? The fact that
to me, that's the same thing, but okay.
I'll
set it tacky.
When they want to do like a group thing with like his friend or whatever,
mm-hmm.
That made me uncomfortable. Like it's supposed to though. How I mean, is that?
That is supposed to make you uncomfortable.
No, and I'm not saying that it makes the movie sit unwell with me, but at what point would you be like, oh, I don't like this. Obviously you get pleasure from this. So let's just do like a little threesome and that should solve all of our problems. Are you that dumb, dude?
I mean, I get why it's uncomfortable now, and you probably couldn't make this movie now.
Kevin Smith probably could.
Well, yeah, because nobody's going to his movies anymore.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's true. I'm not.
Wow.
Why is that mean if it's true?
You're going to piss John off.
I realize I'm a Smith devotee, too. I mean, it's been a while since he made something. You know, Red State was the last one I really enjoyed, but I love Kevin Smith.
I feel like you just jumped out of the clubhouse tree.
Yeah, I could hear him hitting the ground in a second.
the movie itself was really smart in a way because it was talking about insecure masculinity and how far we take it because men can be so insecure, especially bro men, that they can't fathom the idea that you wouldn't be interested in a guy. So the only way to get this out of your head is to sleep with your friend. And it's just like this weird capturing of male insecurities at the time. And I thought it was just really well done. I think it still plays to me. I mean, when I said it tacky earlier, I meant what I said. I just, like, the movie is really about a guy who's an idiot who thinks these are the solutions to real, I wouldn't even call it a problem. It's his problem. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. These are real solutions to his problem. Which everything that happens in the movie is his problem. She does nothing wrong. His friend doesn't really do anything wrong.
His friend exasperates every situation.
Well, yeah, he makes everything worse. But I'm saying, but the central portion of the movie where all this is coming from stems from Ben Affleck and his insecurities. I mean, correct me if you think I'm wrong, because it has been a while since I've seen it, but that's the way I remember it.
No, I think you're actually on the right point. I think you are. Maybe I was just taken aback because it just seemed in today's environment how rewatching it was just kind of jarring. It was weird how the dialogue kind of played out and just how the characters were acting. But when you remind me that these two guys are kind of boobish, yeah, I mean, you're right.
She's the only one that was logical in the entire movie of those three because she's being sensical. She's being confident. She's being honest with her past and everything else. And at every opportunity, basically, Ben Affleck's making her feel bad about it.
Yeah, it is really just all of his insecurities. And I like that they start to show that she can have her interests. And that doesn't mean that she's going to want to cheat on him. Because that's the thing is, like, they're in a relationship and he's like, let's do a threesome. And she's like, I'm not down for that. Like, that's not what this is. You know, we're supposed to be in a relationship. And you're trying to involve other people because you're so concerned about what I'm thinking or about what I'm attracted to. And your insecurities should be there if you have them for any gender. Like, it shouldn't matter. But he's legitimately worried about everything she's doing and him not being enough. And he puts that on her.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that a lot in relationships on the fronts of both men and women. So I think it was a good – done well – but still made people who are idiots like those characters be able to want to watch it and it not be right in your face. But I can see exactly what John's saying, where like right now in our climate, there's little a way that this would really work. I think Kevin Smith would have to be behind it to even come out with a property like this, and people would still give him huge backlash.
Well, to John's point of why it's not cool anymore, like, you know, how he can't believe that this was cool. I believe people are so jumpy around even mentioning lesbianism or homosexuality because they're so afraid of stepping on a landmine. That's why it's so hard to – it's harder to watch now because our times have gotten so increasingly sensitive.
I mean, yeah.
To a degree. Not to a degree. To a lot of degrees.
And what was nice for me to watch is because I know those guys. I went to school with those guys. The artists who did comics, and they were had brilliant ideas as to how to write a story and make characters and all this other jazz. But when it came to having to deal with people, they were kind of bro-y, and they were kind of dumb, and they were kind of insecure about the whole thing. And it was a great way for me to spend time with people that I used to know way back in the day. But at this, again, just in today's environment, like those people don't survive. Those people aren't those people anymore.
Yeah, it's true. They bury it down. You can't have it on the outside. That's for sure. Because man, today's society will eat you alive. Don't go on Twitter. Don't you do it. You'd be banned.
On a side note, so we have all of this happening, but with all of the intellectual sides of things. But isn't it interesting and also kind of weird that this is actually kind of how, I don't want to say all men, but some men do, they fear that as much as they want to see girl-on-girl action, they fear that the girl they want is going to be into other girls, and they're emasculated by that and worried about it and insecure.
That's double the competition. You can't compete with that. That's why.
Is that what it is?
That's all it is.
Dated this before, and it's weird.
Yeah, most of the time, the guy's got maybe a good 3 minutes in them and before they got to take a nap.
I don't know what that has to do with anything.
John, but are you speaking from experience?
I think he's basically only speaking from experience.
I can't be the only one.
You're the only one that's going to cop to it on this podcast.
Look, I'm just saying, when I lost my virginity, he lasted longer than you apparently do.
Wow. That's probably way more of the information than I needed.
Right? So that kind of cut deep, too. Thanks.
So sorry. At least it was funny.
All right, moving on to our Patreon supporters.
At least it was funny. That was a surprise.
We wanted to take...
What? That's so mean.
We wanted to take a second. Wow, he just threw it right back at you.
He did. Oh, my God.
You like Bryan Adams, you, because that cuts like a knife.
Oh, wow. You went there.
Well, we wanted to take a second and extend our thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated graciously at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. We'll have a new bonus episode hopefully later this week. Thank you, guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Now, we've got two spoiler-free reviews we're going to hit pretty quick because we want to get to this cult movie topic. First is Polar. The world's top assassin, Duncan Vizsla, is settling into retirement when his former employer makes him a liability to the firm. Against his will, he finds himself back in the game, going head-to-head with an army of young killers. Sounds a lot like John Wick 3. So, this is a pretty straightforward story. John Wick with a better accent. I have two questions, John, because you saw this.
All right.
Okay, because we're going to try and keep it short.
Okay.
How is Mads Mikkelsen as Duncan? Is he a badass assassin? Badassin, if you will?
He's totally a badassin, and he's very cool about it. He's not like John Wick in the sense of like where John Wick was, he's like a hammer. You know, he goes in and he just hammers every single problem. He's looking for a nail and he's going for it. The Black Kaiser, which is the nickname that Duncan Vizsla has, is more of a surgeon in the way he does things.
Okay. So, but this is like, he was good enough to where you could see a franchise with Mads. Like,
they set it up so that you can definitely have a franchise for this.
Okay, and the other question, how does the action hold up? That's really what this movie's about. It's about action. Is it gratuitously over the top or pretty straightforward and brutal?
I have to put some thought into it, and the thought says gratuitously over the top. It's kind of cartoonish and comic booky in some spots, but it's also very smart. They understand that they're dealing with an assassin who's in his 50s, so he plans everything out to a great degree, but it also has a great like animation to it, so if you will.
Okay, so if $10 is full price permission, what do you give Polar, which is on Netflix currently?
$6.50.
Ooh, that sounds like a solid flick.
It is a solid flick.
Next up, we've got Wretch, which you and I both watch, but go ahead.
So, Wretch, it's being released actually the 29th, so when you hear this, it's probably already out. Three friends decide to go into the woods for a night of getting high and drinking, because going in the woods and doing that seems like a really good idea.
That's what I do. I go backpacking, drink in the woods, three friends. Yeah. One of us comes back, the other two stay.
So when they come back, they seem different, but they also have an entity following them around. Aaron, how did the story grab you?
Story-wise, I thought it was very, very clever. It takes a while to understand exactly where they're going. And once you know where it's going, I found it really interesting. It was very intriguing. The story was very clever. It's much more layered than most movies of this type are, you know, kind of a found footage-ish, but also filmed pretty standardly type, which is really hard to explain because it's not found footage, but it's not not found footage. You know what I mean? Like parts of it are filmed in found footage and the other parts are filmed traditionally. Just, you know, a little bit more low budget. It's an independent film. But the story, I really liked the story. I thought the story was very, it was fascinating. It was interesting. It was intriguing, the places that they went. And I really dug how the movie ended because it left you with a whole lot of what? And I like movies that do that.
Yeah, no, it was, it is a very interesting story. I did like the layers to it. They had a couple of great moments in there that really could have told, if they actually extended those moments a little bit further or did more with those moments, it would have actually instead extended the impact a little bit more than we got. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. It's actually something kind of different and new. And I actually had a little bit of trouble myself with the way it was filmed. I didn't like the switch back and forth between the found, sort of found footage, but not found footage. It kept on jarring me. But then there was a great moment where they explained why some of it is filmed the way it is. And like that moment, right, itself really, I found a lot very credible for the movie.
Yeah, I had two moments like that. The webcam moment, which I, that's all I'll say. Once you get, you know, if you watch it, you'll see that. And then the ending. I thought the ending was pretty awesome in a way.
Yeah. All right. So what kind of score would you give this movie?
For $10 full price of admission, I would give it about 5. You know, I don't think it's a great movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. It has a lot of interesting ideas, low budget. Some of the acting, you know, is hit or miss. But I really started to get roped in, especially the last half hour, I found fascinating. So I still think it's worth a watch. You? What'd you give it?
I'm right about a 450 for a lot of the same reasons. There were a lot of technical things that kind of I found jarring, and that's why I'm giving it the 450.
Okay. Amanda has a question. She rose her hand on a podcast.
I didn't want to interrupt you guys while you were talking about it.
I always recommend people raise their hands on a podcast.
I'm trying not to interrupt. It's
next
my
time,
new thing.
Do this. Raise hand.
Just say raise hand. So it sounds like you guys loved the storytelling. So you would want to see more from the screenwriter doing things and maybe just kind of making some tweaks on the way the direction or casting
the
was.
The story ideas were great. They needed to be fleshed out a little bit more, and more detailed, I think.
Right.
Okay. A lot of
it
potential.
Needed less detail in some spots and more detail in the other spots. There was a lot of superfluous stuff that was drawn out a little bit too long where it left you going, where are we going with this?
Superfluous. Yeah. I like that.
I don't even know what that means. I'm gonna,
like, he's going to check it on Merriam-Webster.
What is that? Superfluous.
You don't even know how to spell it, do you?
No, like supercalifragilistic. Is it the same? Yeah.
Same word.
Okay.
Same thing.
Three new releases we're going to touch on pretty quick to let you know what's coming out on February 1st. We're going to take it each one by one.
All right. So up first, we have Miss Bala. Gloria finds powers she never knew she had when she is drawn into a dangerous world of cross-border crime. This is why they want a wall, you know. Survival will require all the cunning, intuitiveness, and strength. And this is all based off a Spanish language film. This is directed by Catherine Hardwicke. But it stars Gina Rodriguez, Anthony Mackie, and a whole slew of other people.
Only the person who came from Panama could make that joke, because we can't. I think it looks pretty much like by the numbers revenge flick, but I'm curious to see how it plays out.
I like Gina Rodriguez.
Yeah, I want to see her as a badass. I would watch that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to see her as a badass. I think it looks like a lot of fun. And Anthony Mackie, I'll watch him a lot, whatever I can.
Well, on Netflix, we also have Velvet Buzzsaw coming out. A feared critic, an icy gallery owner, and an ambitious assistant snap up a recently deceased artist's stash of paintings with dire consequences. Stars my husband, Jake Gyllenhaal, Rene Russo. I don't know how to say the last name, but Zawi Ashton?
Sure.
I'm so sorry. But what I am excited about is Dan Gilroy, who directed Nightcrawler, is back on this project with Jake Gyllenhaal. So they worked well together.
And Rene Russo.
Yeah. But those two. That movie, Nightcrawler, was insane.
Rene Russo was in Nightcrawler.
Yeah, but it wasn't Jake Gyllenhaal.
Did you know that? Did you see Nightcrawler?
I did. I loved it.
All right.
I saw it for the first time, I think, last year? It was your copy that I borrowed.
I don't know. I don't write it down. I'm not a library.
I actually do have the date somewhere if anyone wants the dates. Yeah,
I'm definitely on board just because of everything she said.
I'm on board because I want to see bad things happen to these people in the art world.
Okay, I like that.
I don't know what that means, but I like it. All right, the last one is Driving While Black. It's on video on demand. It's a dark comedy. Dimitri delivers pizzas for a living, but as a young black man, he is faced with extra challenges while navigating the city. The film explores the reasons why so many black men have concerns of unfair treatment, especially while driving. The script was written with technical advice from the Sheriff's Department in order to create something totally authentic, showing the real deal about police attitudes towards driving while black and race out of place. That's quote-unquote from them.
Hmm. I like that.
Here's what I'll say. I was really excited reading that. Then I watched the trailer. I'm just going to go rewatch The Hate U Give.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's one of those where I think they have a... I will probably check it out at some point, but it's going to have to be a free deal because the trailer didn't do much for me.
Yikes. I was super, I was like, I might change what my pick is from that description. And now I'm like, nah.
You know what? You like, a lot of times, trailers, especially for independent films, do not sell how good a movie is. So if that sounded good, check it out.
That's fine. I'll go to Netflix and watch my husband for free.
Oh, my Lord. So, all right. So pick of the week. What do you guys want to see out of those three? What are you picking? John?
Velvet Buzzsaw, because like I said, I want to see bad things happen to those art people.
Velvet Buzzsaw as well.
Clean sweep. Gilroy and Gyllenhaal for the win.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Now, you're not going to bring up Rene Russo?
I just assumed everybody had already gotten that point because I made it myself.
All right.
I don't need to make the same point. I remembered her.
Okay.
I clarified I remembered her.
I don't care about her.
Wow. Okay, now we go to our From the Outset In topic, which is cult films. And joining us for it, we're going to have the writer and director of the documentary Survival of the Film Freaks, which you'll be able to hear a little bit more about that in a second, to look at cult films and how they survive in the 21st century, as well as host of the Outside the Cinema podcast, Bill Fulkerson.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
So, ha! Another hello, hello, helloer. Wow.
Is that frowned upon? Is that not? No, should it have been five hellos?
I normally do two, and I get questions and comments.
I liked his better.
Yours is
smoother.
His had more style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I could have gone with the ahoy hoy.
I mean, I might steal that one.
I like that.
That's an old school Simpsons reference. So.
I like that. So okay, so we're basically positioning you as an expert witness as we talk about
cult. Mistake number one.
As we talk about cult films.
Calling me an expert anything.
Here's the, before we get into anything, this is very important. John and I had this debate, okay, because we're going to get into like a proper format and everything else, but we had this debate off air. The Princess Bride.
Oh, boy.
John says this is a cult movie. I say, no way, it made $30 million in 1987. How is that a cult movie? What say you, expert witness?
Well, we already confirmed the fact that I don't like John, but Princess Bride is absolutely a cult film.
Is it? Okay. Why?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Tell me why I'm wrong then, because they love to hear when I'm wrong.
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay. So cult films is such a like hard thing, and I know we're going to talk about definitions and stuff, but mm-hmm. like it's just such a hard thing to really quantify exactly what like makes something a cult product, whether it's a film, a series, a toy, a comic, or whatever. There's no like written set of rules. I look at it and it's like The Princess Bride is a film that is older now, so it's not in the mainstream at all times, and it has a very dedicated fan base that, you know, celebrate that film like with more than just like I have the DVD in my collection. So I think that kind of definitely puts it into that because it's an older property that people are still celebrating today.
Okay.
It was just in a Deadpool movie.
See, there you go. There you go.
No good reason.
That makes it a cult movie in your book if it shows up randomly in Deadpool?
Well, I mean, that's for your book. It definitely should count as a, because you mean you and Deadpool are like best bros.
That makes it awesome. It doesn't necessarily make it a cult thing.
Right.
Yeah, well, whatever. I've heard it both ways. Okay, Bill, so let's just go into that. Let's lead into that because you kind of broached it a little bit. What's your definition of a cult film? I mean, you do a whole movie on it, so you have to have it defined, right? So what's the definition?
You would think so. One of the sections in the movie is people kind of giving their definitions of cult movies, and we interviewed 25, 26 different people, and we got 25 different definitions.
Wow.
So, I mean, I think cult films, there's kind of like a sweet spot for what a definition would be. And that's kind of, you know, a property that doesn't necessarily get the love it deserves right off the bat, and or continues to be celebrated, like I said, for years to come. So there's a lot of different ways to look at it. A lot of people look at just like horror films in general as kind of being cult films, even ones that are successful. So it's a lot of times it's that outsider cinema that isn't necessarily going straight and narrow, or just something that's quirky that is just more interesting than, like, there's never going to be a cult for like the Mission Impossible movies. Doesn't mean they're bad movies or mean that there isn't interesting stuff, but there's just so like nothing interesting about them to make you go back to them years later. I think, you know, the cult films that through the years really, you know, stood the test of time are ones that have interesting things or interesting stories, and maybe not even stories that go like as actually part of the film, but just stories around the film that make it interesting. It's stuff that people want to go back to and people want to share. Like, nobody's, you know, freaking out about their love for the Austin Powers movies. You know what I mean? Like, you can enjoy them, but that doesn't, because you enjoy something, it doesn't necessarily give it that cult status. People need to have investment, I think probably the best way to put it. People invested in properties that want to make sure that like they're celebrated continuously despite what the mainstream thinks of them.
Would you say the first Austin Powers was a cult movie though? Because I mean, it was mildly successful, and then afterward, people were raving about it.
I mean, I don't know the numbers offhand, but I know the first Austin Powers was pretty successful right out of the gate. 54. But it's also a time period where like everything had merchandise. Like, McFarlane did a bunch of figures for the Austin Powers movies, 1,000,005 toys. Like, I think Austin Powers was on friggin' like McDonald's cups, like sodas and stuff. And everyone's quoting jokes and stuff. So that was, I mean, I felt that was like mainstream right from the get-go. Something like, if you're looking at comedy, something like Anchorman, I feel, has way more cult sensibilities than an Austin Powers does, because there wasn't right off the bat like Anchorman tie-ins at Taco Bell. You know what I mean?
Not that I can remember.
I would have bought those though.
Yeah, I would. So, all right, well, you asked all those people, you got different responses. Let's go around the room again. Amanda, what do you consider a cult film?
Well, he's mentioned a lot of the things. It has to have some sort of like a devoted, crazy devoted fan base. And they take on the movie in a lot of different directions, more than just, I really like this movie, or I've watched it a few times. People watch these cult films religiously, routinely, more often. They quote it in weird conversations. The concept is kind of often obscure in some way that I've noticed. And we've kind of touched on it. They don't have a huge financial gain. But for me, that doesn't necessarily negate them from being a cult film. If they have had some success, I could still see them as being, because they could have gotten profit from, you know, different avenues. It could have just been outside the box office. But if it persists over time and it's not one that critics are crazy about, then to me, that's still, it could still potentially fall into it. But you have to kind of look at it as an individual basis. You might meet the categories, but you still might not be a cult film in my eyes, I guess.
John, you're heavy sighing. What's that mean?
Doesn't really necessarily mean anything besides, it's hard to follow Bill on this because he really is the expert. However, and he doesn't like me, and that's okay because
I'm coming around. You just called me an expert, so I'm coming around on you.
Right.
It's in the format.
Don't worry. I'll mess it up soon. Don't worry. I think if I were to quantify a good quote, like the one thing that makes a good cult movie is there's a philosophy in selling things or putting something out there in the world or on the internet of the long tail. And that long tail is described as the big spike in the beginning and then the life beyond that. And how well it carries, and the cult movies that I can always think of, that long tail, or as far as how people bring it up, is hard to miss. The spike is smaller than what you get in the way of its long tail, and it could have some other things in the idea of maybe it didn't do great in the box office, or maybe it was critically beat up a bit. And then it still manages to find, over long periods of time, to find that audience through word of mouth or whatever other reason. Like Boondock Saints is a good example of that, I believe.
Amanda just raised her fist.
Oh, yeah. I threw that right in the air. I breakfast clubbed that.
And Bill rolled his eyes. So this is fascinating because all these visual cues.
We'll fight, Bill.
Over Boondock Saints?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we will.
That is a battle you will lose every time.
No, 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 no.
I just all right.
Fight, all right. fight. You brought it up, so you're back on my shit list.
Well, I was just grabbing at straws because here's the thing about Boondock Saints. It's a movie that for me that I didn't even hear about until years after it was released, and it hit me at a time period in which that whole kind of story kind of really resonated with me. So, it is as far as like the example of it was passed from person to person when it finally got to me. It's that kind of story. Yeah, I think that's what happens with a lot of cult movies. It gets kind of passed like a virus.
Are you also an anti-hero that goes around murdering people for justice?
I can't answer that question.
Okay.
And everything except for the justice part of it, right?
Right.
Somebody got me to watch Boondock Saints. All he had to tell me was there's a cat. And I'm like, all right, I gotta watch it.
Spoiler alert.
I think it's been out a while.
No.
Yeah.
No, you can't use that on a cult film.
What's that?
Because you can't say, oh, well, it's been out for a while. My co-host on my podcast does it all the time. It's like, well, that movie's been out for 25 years. And it's like, yeah, did you watch it before I made you watch it? And the answer is always no.
That's a good point. You know what? That might be bleeped then. Maybe I'll bleep it.
I think Boondock Saints is absolutely a cult film. There's no question there. I just don't like it.
I'm going to sidetrack this. I'm going to derail the whole conversation. I need to know why you don't like
it. That's a
surprise. I don't like it because I don't think it necessarily offers anything that you can't get in another movie done better. And I also know the story of how it was made and how big a D-bag the director is.
That's true.
Yeah, he... Yeah.
So it kind of... And I kind of heard the story beforehand. So I don't know if you guys have seen the documentary that was made about the making of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it can really change the way you kind of look at the movie in itself. But... I just don't, you know, if I'm going to watch like over the top action and like that stuff, it's just not the movie to go to for me. I mean, it doesn't offer something that I haven't seen in another movie done better.
What
Sean
movie?
Patrick Fannery with a bad Irish accent.
I live in Boston, so trust me, I've heard lots of bad accents.
did it also offend you in some way too? Like, you're like, this is not what Boston is like.
I mean, I can't think of a movie except maybe The Town that actually really kind of spoke to what actually people in Boston are like.
Was Departed in Boston?
It was, but it was still kind of a caricature.
Okay.
Yeah, it was.
So
I've never been there, so I have no idea what I only know what the movie's presenting.
I mean, obviously he's not wrong. He's from there. But if you watch The Town...
It would be really a-hole of wrong.
Because I used to travel to Boston on business, and the first time I saw The Town, I'm like, wow, that's like the first time I've seen somebody nail it. Good Will Hunting's kind of close, okay. I would say.
Yeah, Good Will Hunting's not bad.
Yeah.
The Town, though, because The Town tells the story of like Charlestown. And all the people in not all the people in Charlestown. I mean, because if you've never visited Boston and you take it just from the movies, Amanda, you would assume that we all just rob banks and just do oxys all day.
Drink a lot of alcohol, too, like Jameson.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all that stuff is true, apparently. But that movie really tells a strong, like, working class Boston story, you know, and it's based on a true story on top of it. So, I mean, an Affleck being from around here definitely helps, but that's probably one of the truer like tellings of what life in like blue collar Boston is like, believe it or not.
I know I've seen it, but I don't remember it, so I'm gonna have to rewatch
it. It's a really good movie. Yeah.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah. To add to it, I guess I gotta throw my definition out. Man, to me, a cult movie is a movie that people keep telling me I shouldn't like. That's like my number one. And I've had so many Evil Dead's a prime example. You know, people love it now, but at the time I was told, like, it's a crappy movie, blah, blah, blah. And still now people will watch it and say it's a crappy movie. Again, mm-hmm. It's like it went full circle. But that's a big one. I mean, The Adventures of Ford Fairlane is one where I always point to. I'm like, that is a prime cult movie because it's awful. I get it. But I have such a passion for it. To me, that's a cult film. And I have friends that will join hands and will laugh at the same jokes and will go over and over every single joke. We get really passionate about this really bad movie that we just can't get enough of. You know, we've seen it, you know, 50 times, and I can't tell you why, and I can't apologize for it enough. But it's a cult movie to me because I love it. I absolutely love it. That's to me what a cult movie to me doesn't have to be necessarily it made $20 or it made, you know, $100 million. Although I do think budget probably comes into play for me personally, but it has to be something where people keep saying I shouldn't like it and I can't get enough of it. And then you find someone who has that common interest and you kind of develop, I've developed more friendships over cult movies than I have any other kind of movie that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Which is weird, I guess, because they're so rare. You know, the really good cult movies are rare. But man, when you find the right people that really appreciate the same kind of weird movies you do, that's like somebody special.
Can I also interject and say, I don't know that they're as rare as we think they are. Because I was making a list of cult movies and I was like, these are great movies. How are they? I wouldn't have even thought, because I don't put a second thought into cult movies. I'm just like, that's a good movie. I really like it. Really weird. Or people really hate this movie, yet everyone still kind of loves it, like The Room. You know?
I don't know if anybody really loves The Room.
I love how awful it is.
Oh, I love The Room. Yeah, I love The Room. Oh, my
God. So that qualifies, then. We're going with that
one. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, like a pinnacle. I personally think you got to kind of almost take two things I feel they need to be taken out of the discussion a lot of times when people bring up cult movies.
Okay.
Kind of really just like it hinders the discussion. The first piece of that is the financial stuff. Okay. Like it doesn't matter how much money it made. It doesn't matter how much money it cost to make. It doesn't matter whether it was a big production, small production. And then you also, the other piece you got to take out of that is the cult equals bad movie part of it. Cause that's the biggest moot point out of them all, because just because a movie is a cult movie, it's not a bad movie. It just, for whatever reason, that film connects with an audience. I mean, I've watched more bad movies than the average, like, high school graduating class has. And it's like, some of those movies are cults of one. And I'm that one person that, like, found that movie. But I love that movie. So, like, the movie I always bring up is this movie called Alabama's Ghost. None of you have seen it.
No.
I've never even heard of it.
Exactly. But it is the bizarre, like, it's, I guess it's a horror movie, but it's like part blaxploitation, part like psychedelic 70s freak out, like part horror movie. There's vampires, and then there's a robot, and like then there's a magician, and then there's a racist ghost, and it's utterly amazing. But like, nobody has ever seen it, but I love that fucking movie. There's my F-bomb. I'm going to put it there and accent it. I love that fucking movie, but like nobody else knows about it. So like it's hard for me to like champion it to people because it's so off the radar that nobody knows anything about it, which goes back into that bad movie part of it. Like I think it's a good movie. So therefore to me, I don't look at it as like cult equals bad. Mm-hmm. Cult equals films that you want to share with people.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be like so often people assume just because they say it's bad or they've heard it's bad that it equals bad. There's a lot of movies that people tell me are bad that I enjoy the shit out of.
Except Holmes and Watson, because that one just is bad.
Well, no, see, there are movies that are just badly made films. And then there are movies
where such a difference between a bad movie and then like a bad, enjoyable film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, The Room is the prime example. Mm-hmm. I mean, that movie isn't good in any way, shape, or form. But if you watch even Alone, I don't think I get as much enjoyment. But you got more than one person with you. Mm. That movie is the best time you're going to have that week.
Unless you give me a whole bottle of wine. I did. My first experience was watching it alone in my bedroom.
That's
and I was
sad.
Sober.
That's sad.
And it was real rough. I was like, I can't believe I'm getting through this. And then I watched it again with a friend and laughed the whole time.
Which is exactly the intent he was going for when he made it, according to him.
No, absolutely not. No way. He thought he was making like Terms of Endearment or like some Tennessee Williams type classic movie, like tortured love story. No, you did not make a black comedy. You like that's how it ended up being. But there's no, like, I don't care how many times Tommy Wiseau says that, I will fight him.
is there anything you guys think negates a movie from being a cult film?
Well, I think that if you take a look at a lot of these stuff like Star Wars or Marvel movies or any of those things that has its own following of people that try to raise it up and try to, like, they all, people would get dressed up for it and pass around. Just the fact that it's so huge and so marketed, that takes it out of the running, in my mind.
I think on a weird level, Marvel and Star Wars is still a cult of some sort. Yeah. I don't think you can call, like, Star Wars a cult film, but it's still got that, you know, feverish fan base that supports the whole deal that goes along with it, with, you know, whether it's conventions or Halloween costumes or toys. I don't know if there's really, like, one specific thing that can knock something out of being a cult movie. Nothing like comes to mind, I don't think.
So in your mind, even if somebody, as long as people are passionate about it, that can rise to the occasion of the cult film.
For the most part, yeah. I can't think of anything that I've come across that I might not agree with it, but I'm not going to be like, no, you're wrong, that's not a cult movie.
I kind of feel like it needs to have some sort of controversy around it.
Controversy? What do you mean?
There's differing opinions where people are like, no, I really like this. And people are extremely passionate about it to the point where they're like, this is such a great movie.
Well, they do that with Star Wars. I mean, look at anybody who doesn't like The Last Jedi. Somebody's going
to
hate them.
But goes to his point that, you know, those can still be considered in that realm. Like, the fans could be cultish. But it's not necessarily a cult movie. But for me, I feel like it has to have some sort of opposing view. Like, you have to have some people, at least even if it's a minor...
Some dissension.
Yeah, who are like, this is not a good movie. This is actually a horrible movie. And then the rest of the cult's just like chanting, we love the movie. We love the movie. And it gets really weird. And that's what I think...
That's a Scientology meeting.
It is. But that's it. I could be wrong. You know, we do have, as we've called him, our expert here, and he can tell me that I'm wrong. But for me, I if everyone were to just be like, no, we all love this movie, and I didn't hear any bad things about it, I would not be like, this just isn't a cult movie then.
I don't know. I would consider.
Isn't that everything, though? I mean, everything, not everybody. You can't name one movie that is universally 100% liked by everybody.
E.T. I've never heard anyone say bad things about E.T.
There's people.
I'm sure there's somebody that doesn't like it.
Well, I mean, like a group, though.
There you go. See, John's wife doesn't like it. End of discussion.
Okay, she's wrong. And we're going to have a talk about this later.
So that's what the answer is. Okay.
No, but I get your point. But I think that still gives them the potential to be cult movies. But if there isn't anything and the vast, almost everybody is like, this is a great movie, then how can you have a cult if it's... You know what I mean? I guess.
To a degree, but I would argue that Star Wars, the first Star Wars, is probably one of the biggest all-time cult movies. Because that movie started, and, you know, it grew from word of mouth, and the fan base became so passionate. That's why it's become this just ginormous franchise, is because of that first movie was all about passionate, 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 passionate people making other people, forcing them. Kidnapping them, throwing them in vans, whatever they could do to get them to go to the theater and check this movie out, because it was the best thing they'd ever seen. And it was amazing. I would argue that would probably be one of the first real major cult movies. I mean, you could throw in all the low budget 70s flicks, but I would say Star Wars is like the biggest example of a cult film in a way.
I think Star Wars is probably the first one to make that mainstream crossover, because when people say cult films, almost universally, the first thing to come up is Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a fan of it. I understand its place. I understand why people love it. But that's the perfect example of the classic. It did not really do well when it was released. But through the years and through, you know, midnight screenings, and it built these legs and then built this fan base. Star Wars is the first one that kind of really, I think, skipped that first step of not being successful upon its release. Like, it obviously, like... opened small, but where it opened well, and then as it grew, because of the popularity, it made it what it was. So I don't necessarily, I don't know whether I think Star Wars is a cult film or not, but like another example of that in modern times is Paranormal Activity.
Oh yeah,
where it started, you know, it played some film festivals, was acquired by a big distributor, and they created a fervor over it by slowly opening it in cities and spreading this marketing campaign of like, oh, bring it to your city. Even though they knew they were opening it in like 3,000 screens anyway, they just kind of built this fervor of people like being, oh, it's the scariest movie I've ever seen, and creating a want where there wasn't one, even though it was going to come out anyway.
And they also played on the idiocy of some of us who kind of went into it thinking it was real.
You thought Paranormal Activity was real?
Yeah. I didn't go.
Maybe that's just the idiocy of one.
I went home and I could not shut the bathroom door. I had to pee with the door open because I was so scared. And this, Aaron knows me and knows how I am with scary movies. And I'm very rarely ever scared. And this, I was just like, and then after that, I realized it wasn't real. And I was like, oh, I feel better now.
Well, I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed for you.
I was ashamed for me too.
All right. Well, Bill, to add on that, in an era of so many people finding funding for films, and filmmakers are going for the status like right out of the gate, they want their movie to be a cult film because that's how it's going to make money in a way. Does cult cinema still exist for new properties, or is this kind of a thing that only really existed up until a few years ago?
No, it absolutely still it's still available out there for films to become that. The issue we see now, though, is with the way the internet changes the way films are promoted and the way that films are marketed, it's really tough for some of those films to ever get seen at all. So you have a large number of films that will try to be a cult film by adding a film grain to them. And like, we made it look like a, you know, old grindhousey movie, and we were going for that 70s look. And that aesthetic is like, I can appreciate that. I don't particularly like it. But just because you made your movie look like a film from the 70s doesn't mean that you're going to be able to garner that following. You still have to make a good movie. You have to make, you know, you still have to write a script. You still have to film it in a way that's going to be interesting. And you still have to make sure that your audience is going to have something to latch on to. Just because you made a bloody movie in your parents' garage doesn't mean that everyone's going to latch on to it. There's a weird sense of entitlement that I think comes along with a lot of that stuff, where everyone, not everyone, but like, there's this, you know, group of filmmakers that seem to think that just because they love these other things and they want to pay homage to them, that they can do it better. You still have to put the work into it. I think it's going to be really interesting 10 years from now when we're looking at a lot of the films that people are talking about, because there's so much stuff and the consumption of it is at such a rate that so few things really get to stick. But I think we're also really lucky because we can consume so much content. And if you're a movie fan, like, I see people complaining about, like, you know, I miss VHS and it's not the same because we have Netflix. And are you kidding, man? Like, you can see so many movies now that you would never in a million years you would have been able to see back in the 80s, because HBO and Showtime only bought like a small package of films, and they would play the same films over and over and over again. And like in the doc, we talk a lot about cable and how it created a lot of cult films for the 80s. We don't necessarily have that now because people can pick and choose what they want. They're not being forced to rewatch things. So it's a different climate for sure, but there's absolutely going to be those films that, you know, 10 years from now, we're going to be like, oh, you remember Green Room, or do you remember you know, House of the Devil, and, you know, these movies that like are interesting, well-made films. And those are going to be the ones that are going to be the cult properties, because they're still good, well-made films.
While you were doing the documentary and you're talking, I mean, you talked to Ted Raimi and you talked to a lot of people for the documentary. Did you come to find out, I mean, did they share their first experiences in terms of when they realized the properties that they were associated with were, and, I mean, some of them actually were intending to make, like, you interviewed Adam Green, right? From Hatchet?
Yep.
Now, I would argue that his film was intended to be a cult film. Did they talk to you about like when they realized their movie was a cult film, or when their movie was taken to a different level?
I mean, to a point, I think a lot of that stuff is actually going to end up in the extra features on the Blu-ray, but we cut it out of the feature because it just didn't really fit the story. But I mean, Adam Green's a really good example. I don't necessarily think he was trying to make like Hatchet a cult film. He just wanted to make a throwback slasher movie. So his heart was in the right place. It wasn't about, oh, I'm going to make this look like an 80s slasher, but I want to make it feel like an 80s slasher. Mm-hmm. But he still, you know, had a great story to go with. He had good practical effects. He had Kane Hodder playing Victor Crowley in it. So like, he had all of the right things to make Hatchet an enjoyable movie beyond just like, a throwback to 80s style horror. And that's the difference of like having those pieces in place and rather just being like, well, I think I'm going to make a revenge movie, but I'm not going to write a script that's going to be engaging. I'm not going to, you know, cast the right people in the spots. I'm just going to hire my friends and go with it. Back in the day, you could do that because not every single person on the planet was like trying to make, you know, trying to make a movie. Everyone has an iPhone that can shoot on 24 frames per second in 4K. Anybody can shoot a good looking movie now. It's about the thought process and the talent that goes into it. So a guy like Ted Raimi is really interesting because he's been in so many different things, and he him as a person and his body of work belong to so many different cults, because obviously heavily involved with the Evil Dead series because he was in all the original ones and his brother directed them. So there's that cult world that he lives in. But his biggest thing he was saying is the Xena fans, because he was in Xena for so long. So it's a different type of cult property, but Xena is a huge one because they have conventions and people dress up like all the characters from Xena. So he was just like, I just wanted to have good roles. So his mindset was not about like, oh, well, down the road, people are going to remember this role. I just, in the moment, feel this is the right role for me to take. And then it happened for him that a lot of them just kind of gravitated to being cult properties because of who he was and the previous jobs he had taken. It's the type of thing where, you know, for each person is different, I guess.
You kind of said something about how cable television made it easier for cult films to develop, but now we have the benefit of being able to see so many more movies because of streaming. Do you think it makes it harder then for overall for cult films to come out then? Because they don't have it being forced and people, like you said, have the selection of picking and choosing what they want to see?
I don't think it's so much to getting them to come out, because anybody can get their movie out if they really want to. I mean, you can put your own movie on Amazon Prime if you want. But the issue is getting people to watch it. You need something that's going to hook people in, you know, whether it's a good trailer or you get it in some film festivals and get some buzz about what you're, you know, what you're working on. You want to definitely like take the time to figure out a way to get it out there. It's different. It's so different now because we're not being force fed anything. So there's not that, like, you're not going to see Beastmaster 27 times this weekend on cable. So like you have to find those properties. And I think the discerning film fan will still find them. It's just a matter you have to work a little bit harder to weed through the stuff that isn't worth your time to find that gem that is.
Since we've been doing this podcast, I can think of about three or four movies in which maybe they're not quite cult status yet, but because of how much we adore those movies and in any chance we get to talk about those movies, we brought them up. Like Coherence is one that I think of. We even named an award for that. That can definitely has a chance to become a cult movie. What were the other ones that I just had in my head? The Guest.
The Guest is a big one. Yeah.
The Guest is a big one. I Kill Giants, I think, is a big one. It's just time hasn't proven yet whether or not those will eventually become a cult film. More people need to get out there and see it. More people need to share it. And I think part of the problem right now is that people aren't sharing that information as readily as they used to.
Do you think it's not being shared or just people aren't paying attention because there's so much stuff?
I agree with that. I think people share now more than ever. But the issue is between different algorithms on places like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, like it's whether you see it or not. It's almost like screaming into a vacuum all at the same time. And just everything just gets sucked away and you get left with like two or three things.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it on numerous episodes where there's so much stuff. When you recommend it to a friend and they're like, yeah, I don't have time for that. You know, that's a great movie. I don't have time for that.
This is actually just Aaron's conversations with
this
people.
This is my conversation with everyone. I'm like, I watch a lot of movies. I'm telling you, I know when it's a good movie or a bad movie. And, you know, I see a lot of bad movies, but I see a lot more good movies because
you know how to filter.
I know how to filter. But when you recommend them, people always say, oh, yeah, I'll definitely check that out. And they never check it out. And a lot of that is because there's no time. They don't have time. You know, not everybody is like us where we watch, you know, 10 movies a week or whatever we're watching. And that might be light by some standards. Majority of people, you know, they work. They go do all their stuff. They're going to watch maybe two movies a week, maybe. And it's going to be when they're tired and they got a pot pie in their lap. You know, so they don't have the time or the inclination to really seek out something that might be a little too weird for them. So that's where I think cult films are kind of suffering today, because there's so much popular content out there that people would rather bounce into those. And really, just it's just the guys like us that really devoted love the cult film itself that are really checking a lot of these out, where Joe Average is, you know, where they used to, they would check them out because there wasn't as much content out there. Well, now they've got plenty of stuff they already know is good that they want to check out.
I have another thought that I think has something to do with it, is that at least in my life, the idea of friends getting together and watching movies over the weekend is something that doesn't happen nearly as much as it used to.
Because nobody likes you anymore. That's what it was.
Oh my God. Poor John today.
Just kidding. Too close?
He's got a good point, though.
I think John's hurting. Terrible?
No.
I hope he did that, too.
No, that people aren't.
You know, if I had any good feelings left, I probably would have hit one.
Sorry, continue your point.
You know what? It did hit the one good feeling left, and I'm trying to resolve it. Well, no, I just think that nowadays we are so apt to just sit down and watch things as opposed to make plans with our friends to sit down and watch things with our friends, because maybe it's because our lives are too busy, or maybe it's because it's just the way TV is just so, TV and movies are just so readily available to us now that we don't stop and think, hey, I should have people over and watch this.
I agree with that. I think another issue to kind of give a second point to go along with that is, binging of TV shows has really hurt movie watching.
Oh, big time. Big time.
I can tell you that as a fact in my life.
Yeah, same for me too. Like, people will spend 9 hours watching Game of Thrones when in that 9 hours you could bang out 5 or 6 movies. You know, especially if you're watching like crap from like the 80s and 70s where everything was always like an hour and 25 minutes. So binging of TV shows is a huge kick in the balls to like genre film watching.
Man, and I can't get anyone, unless they are a devoted appreciator of cult films or old films, or, you know, they just like to try, you know, quote unquote art. I hate to use that word, but that's what it is. You know, it's hard to get anybody these days that isn't already in that circle to try anything that's not from the last 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, they will not.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
2013. Whoa, 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 whoa. That's old. I don't have time for that. I can't get anyone to check out like the classic cult films. Even, I mean, you might not like Rocky Horror, but trying to get somebody to watch Rocky Horror now is near impossible. Getting somebody to watch The Room, unless you have a group of people and they're going to do it like it's a fun activity. But really, it's more those smaller ones, you know, Evil Deads and, you know, your random small ones that don't look that great anymore. They'll watch 10 minutes and tell you it sucks.
Fight Club. You can get people to watch Fight Club.
That's good. Brad Pitt. I don't know if I call that up. Cult movie. I know a lot of people.
No, it's a cult movie. It actually qualifies.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
I don't like that. I agree, but I agree.
Yeah, I don't like that it is, but it is.
People are really passionate about that movie, so that's I guess why it qualifies. But I'm not a fan.
Well, it's a lot like
people are called psychotics.
Well, I look at the fan base for that a lot like the way I look at the fan base for the Big Lebowski. Like, people love it. I can't stand it.
I'm with you,
people
Bill.
People love it.
I'm with you. I don't like that movie at all.
Really?
No. I concur.
So we all dislike it?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was fine. I don't dislike it.
See, that's just it. It's the definition of okay or less. It's not like I don't understand, other than Jeff Bridges basically playing Jeff Bridges, I don't understand what the appeal to that movie is. I mean, there's a couple lines that are cool. The dude abides. Okay. I didn't laugh.
I abide too. You don't see everyone talking about me.
No. Well, we do on this podcast if it makes you feel better.
I this feel like whole you're talking episode.
At me. No.
Nobody even likes me and I abide.
See? Maybe you're getting a bad shake of it, John. You're all right, kid.
Well, he's come and gone like 3 times on that one, John, so don't get too comfortable in that spot.
Oh, I'm not.
No, that is one of those where, you know, they just had that where he's doing a Super Bowl spot, which, by the way, it's an awful spot if you watch it. So don't get too excited. The dude is back and it's an awful commercial with Sarah Jessica Parker for some reason. But people got so excited and pumped up. They're like, maybe it's going to be another sequel. And da-da-da. Well, I mean, they had the date, so I don't understand where that came from. But they got so pumped up, like, maybe this will be more dude movies. I'm like, why would you want to watch that again? Just go watch Jeff Bridges do an interview. There you go. Solved. It's the most weird cult following I've ever seen for a film. That and Napoleon Dynamite. I don't get that one either.
I don't see as many people like getting all hot over Napoleon Dynamite, but yeah, I don't get the
There are some crazy young ones. I was obligated to watch it in school.
They played it in school?
They made us watch it. I don't know why. It was an English class. I don't know what it had to do with English. But yeah, our whole class had to watch it.
I think everything you just said is exactly what's wrong with the education system currently.
I've never seen it outside of school.
You know what it was? Is your teacher was hungover.
Probably.
So guess it's movie day, right? Just sit back and watch it and shut up.
She's British.
The one thing that just happened to be in the back seat.
was this college?
No, this was...
Because you're what, 25, 26? 25. Okay, so that would have been a long time ago.
Yeah.
That movie would have just come out.
It was literally when it first came out. We watched
That's
it in school.
That's a shitty teacher.
Or the best teacher ever.
Yeah, I guess it goes either way, right? Yeah. All right, well, one of these, we're kind of going to skip a question because I already brought it up. So not all of us are as invested in this. The hard to find gems, and a lot of popular films are out there, so it's easy to understand why. How do you sell somebody on a cult film? How do you talk someone into watching them when the issue of the popular film is already out there?
I found it's way too hard to try to verbally sell them on the movie. I have to make them sit down and experience it.
Like kidnap them?
Yes, if I need to. Because the experience for a lot of these cult movies and watching it with someone else makes it 10 times better. You're able to, first of all, you can't leave because I made you sit down and watch this with me. And then they sit through it and they're like, wow, that was a really great movie, because some people are just really hesitant about it. And if you try to explain it to them, some of them sound so ridiculous. If I were to say, look, I want to watch this super weird movie where there's a couple and there's random things that don't add up, like a football scene and random breast cancer diagnosis that doesn't ever come back up again, and it made $1,800 at the box office, you want to watch it with me this weekend? Everyone I know would be like, no, hard pass. But then you have all these people who have parties to watch The Room, and they're sold on it. And that's an example of a bad movie. If I can get somebody to watch a crappy movie through an experience, imagine what I could do if I kidnapped them and made them watch good movies.
So your approach is the Cosby method?
You got to do what you got to do.
Okay.
It's about the pudding pops. You see, you take the pudding pop, you watch the movie, you wake up and you don't know where you are.
John, how do you talk to somebody? And please don't Cosby it.
I've actually given up on talking people into watching things. I thought long and hard about this question. I was like, how do I make this more interesting? And I can't, because I've just gotten to the point where, here, it's a movie I like. You should watch it. I don't want to watch it. Okay.
You're tired of trying to sell?
I am so over it. I just can't do it. I really can't.
What about you, Bill? Because you've got a whole podcast trying to talk people into watching movies they don't want to watch.
See, that's the thing, though. I have the podcast, so I don't have to try to convince anybody to watch anything. It's just, we talk about it, and then it will recommend it or we won't recommend it. And if people choose to check it out, awesome. I think that's kind of the only way you can do it now. That it's, I agree with John. If somebody doesn't want to watch something, why are you wasting your breath? It's like, it's not going to change their life if they watch, you know, Eastern Condors or like some other like random 70s, like Italian horror movie. If you're really like pushing that, maybe you need to reassess what you're doing with your life. That if you're upset because they won't watch any giallos from the 70s. But I mean, it's know your room, I think, is a part of it too, whereas like know who you're talking to. And like if you're talking to somebody, I kind of equate this to like a music conversation. When I used to be in bands, I'd be like, people would be like, oh, you're in a band, man, what type of music is it? Oh, it's like, you know, it's like heavy stuff. Oh, is it like heavy metal? No, it's not really like heavy metal. It's more like punk or hardcore. Oh, hardcore, like Disturbed? No, not like Disturbed. But like know your audience, right? Like you're talking to that dude and you don't even like, you're like, obviously your favorite band is like Kid Rock. So is it like, what type of music you to play? Oh, it's you wouldn't like it. It's like really crazy stuff. Like, you just don't even get into it. So I do that with movies a lot of times, too, where I'll be talking to somebody and I'll be like, oh, you know, Do you like horror movies? Because that always kind of where it goes. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, what type of horror movies? You're like, oh, like I really like The Conjuring. Okay, you like The Conjuring, so I'm not gonna bring up like, The Burning or like something. Like, oh, you like The Conjuring? Okay, cool. Have you ever seen Friday the 13th? Like, you know, you kind of have to gauge what the people are into before you're starting to drop like these nuggets that they just wouldn't waste their time with, because you're not helping anybody out, because they're just gonna be like, yeah, I talked to this weirdo at the party and he kept trying to get me to watch all these movies about rape and revenge.
I think he was trying to tell me something. I don't know what it was.
I have a problem with that gauge, because I never know how to measure things like that when I'm talking to people. And I guess that's just because I'm really bad at reading rooms sometimes, but I always get like an elbow in my ribs when my wife hears me talking about a certain thing, and I look over and she says, that's not for them. Oh, okay.
you're talking to grandma and you're like, did you ever see I spit on your grave, grandma? I have
that's the one that breaks everybody too, is I spit on your grave, because that's like, you don't get lower than that.
The original or the remake? Well, I guess either one.
Oh, the original. Yeah. The remake actually isn't it's not bad. I mean, but the original is like, it's one. I'm going to tell a story and you guys are going to think I'm the strangest person ever.
Oh, I'm ready.
So, excellent.
All right. So I will preface the story by, I've been married to my wife for 13 years. We've been together for almost 20. Aww. But on our third date, I was like, hey, you want to come over and watch a movie?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you know where this is going.
Oh boy.
Well, and at the time, I still lived with my parents because, mm-hmm. you know, what normal 23-year-old pseudo college dropout doesn't, right? So she came over and I'm like, oh, like what type of movies do you like? And she's like, oh, you know, like whatever. I'm like, do you like horror movies? She's like, oh, some. I'm like, oh, well, let's watch this movie, I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, wow.
In my dark basement. On our third date.
And I'm like, she really liked you.
If she that was,
and that's what she says to this day. She's like, you're lucky I liked you. Because she's like, most women would go screaming from your house.
Maybe that's how you're reading that room. You're like, I wonder if she's going to stick around for the end. Yeah.
God, no. I'm very lucky in general, I feel. So.
I don't think that really puts a girl in the mood. Like, it's the original.
I would say it depends on the girl. Let's be fair.
I mean, that one girl is out there somewhere.
That one special someone.
But that's the thing, though, because I've always been such a movie fan. It wasn't about – this is going to sound weird too, man. I'm making a lot of friends tonight. It wasn't about putting in the mood. It was like, this is like a piece of cinema that I enjoy in this weird sort of way. But like, it's not about the enjoyment of it. I remember saying that too. It's like, it's not the type of movie you're going to like, but you have to understand the performance that's in it and like the weights and measures that are put into like the revenge story that are written into this. It's, you know, a supremely like effective piece of art when you look at it that way, but like, it's not titillating in any sort of way.
No,
it's like super triumphant when you get to the end of it and she is like, you know, taking her revenge on all those scumbag guys. So it was like this weird, like, I wasn't thinking like that. I was just like, oh, you got to check out this piece of art.
I remember watching that one with a buddy who said, oh, she's hot. And I couldn't hang out with him anymore.
Oh my gosh.
I swear to God, I couldn't. It just weirded me out. I'm like, I don't want to be around you anymore. And I know that sounds like not fair because she was attractive, but I couldn't see it because of the content of the movie. And I'm like, and you shouldn't either. Therefore, we can't be friends. I'm sorry.
Didn't you tell the star some story and it weirded her out, Aaron?
Yeah, but I'm not gonna tell that story again.
Oh yeah, because anything should weird out Camilla Keaton. That
no. I meant Sarah Butler of the remake.
Oh, okay. Because Camilla Keaton, the original star, great actress, she's put in some amazing roles in a number of films, but like she's all man, I'm getting to it. She was supposed to be in our documentary and she isn't. We'll just
Aww. Well, see, I
no,
meant
there's no aw. Like. Oh.
I meant
that was cut out.
Yes,
I meant Sarah Butler, and she was in the I Spit on Your Grave remake. She was in the I Spit on Your Grave remake, and I ran up to her because I was trying to get an autograph or picture or something for my daughter because she's a big fan of that movie, and I ran up to her and just said, hey, my daughter's a big fan of yours. And she looked at me like I was the worst parent on the planet. And that was enough to make me walk away in shame. I didn't get anything. I just walked away. I'm like, okay, great work.
Well, normally you don't get kind of like, you got a little starstruck or something.
I wasn't so much starstruck as humiliated at that point. Because I knew exactly what she, and I'm like, no, 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 no. She's not like eight or anything, but it didn't.
The
it
was damage was done. The
damage was done. Yeah, didn't matter. I have gotten to the point where when I recommend a movie, I mean, obviously I recommend on a podcast, and thankfully people that listen to, and I'm sure you know this too, Bill, people that listen to your show, they either trust you or they don't trust you. They kind of know your vibe, so they know if they're going to like it or not. But in my real life, like the real world, I've got it down to probably like two or three people that I'll even give recommendations to, because the rest of them aren't going to listen. Mm. You know, and you already know the people that, hey, yeah, I'll check that out. And you know they're not going to check it out. They're just not. They just say they're going to watch everything you recommend, and then you'll ask them 3 months later, and they still haven't watched it because they're too busy watching How I Met Your Mother for the third time or something like that. Mm. You know, so you gotta recommend it to people that are going to appreciate it and check out your recommendation.
If it's on streaming, they're more inclined to watch it, I've noticed.
Well, it's free.
Exactly. Less effort.
But it's not free. You're paying for that service.
That's true. But nobody will check out, like, I recommended MFA,
which
I love that movie. I don't know. Have you seen it, Bill?
I have not seen it. I've seen the title kick around a couple times.
You should see it, Bill.
Check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely on the, like, I've got the master list of like 700 movies I want to check out.
Well, put it at least at 330.
Fair.
I've recommended it to so many people, and a few, mostly podcast listeners, have checked it out. But I still can't get people that I know in the real world to check that one out. And I just don't know how to sell people anymore. So I'm just going to tell the people I know are going to watch stuff when they're obscure like that. I mean, you could tell them to check out Aquaman and everybody's going to listen. Mm-hmm. But check out MFA. It's got a lot of, you know, there's a lot of interesting pieces to it. You're going to, it's on my list. Okay.
I was really glad I listened to your recommendation on that. It was, some of it's a little hard to get through for me, but it's one of those where it's like, it's worth it. Just kind of like you were talking about.
It's worth the journey.
Yeah. I Spit on Your Grave and revenge flicks like that. It's actually one of my favorite genres.
What's that say about you?
Well, because I like to see that there's some sort of justice served in a different way. And sometimes they're a little too gratuitous, but often you're able to see the strength of that main character who has overcome something so traumatic and torturous, and then they come back and they rise above it, and they're able to live their life still in some capacity. So MFA kind of made me, it's one of those where it's a little uncomfortable at times, but it's so worth going through it.
Do you guys remember your first cult movie experience by chance? Anybody?
Oof. Highlander.
Huh. Hmm. How was that? What, a bunch of people told you to check it out, and then you watched it, and you just were in love with it, or?
Well, it was one of those things. It was it's like one part Poppy Field movie, one part cult movie. I was flipping through the channels, and it just happened to be on an HBO at 3:00 at night when I should have been asleep at the point, but whatever. I was up and whatever. But I was flipping channels. I saw guys in trench coats and stuff using swords, and from that point on I was hooked, and I wanted to watch it again immediately, and I wanted to know everything about it, and everything hit me. And it was just one of those things that like Bill touched on with how cable used to work, which is something we used to follow over these movies on the occasion, and that's what happened with this.
I'd go with Them. Anybody ever see Them? I'm probably the only one.
Oh yeah, no, that's
the giant ant movie.
Giant ants. Yeah.
That was, I don't know why, but I just found that one randomly one day, and, you know, flipping through the channels when I only had three, so it was pretty easy to catch it, but flipped through the channels, caught it, and I would do everything I could to watch that movie from then on. I'd track down the VHS when it finally came out and watch it over and over, taped it off TV before I could buy the movie. I mean, it became like a minor obsession for some reason. I have no idea why. The movie's not great. It's just something that I just couldn't get enough of. Hmm. Weird.
Bill, for me, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to pinpoint one. But I mean, my early stuff was like, I got turned on to horror movies first because my dad we had a VCR pretty early on, and my dad bought two. So he used to dub copies of the stuff we would rent from the video store with those big ass cables. And they would like have the copy protection. So you'd be watching the movie and it would get like really, really dark. Yep. And then it would get light again. So, but like he would copy pretty much everything you would bring home. So I got to see a number of the Friday the 13th, specifically Friday the 13th Part 4.
That's a great one.
Yeah, it's still my favorite one to this day. And Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. And they were on different tapes, but those were the two that I kind of watched more than any others. And they're cult movies now, but at the time they were, you know, pop culture stuff that people were into. But as I got older, I started doing kind of like deeper digging and started watching more like of the out there stuff. So like I got into like Italian horror and like I scored my hands a cop. I got myself a copy of Suspiria, and Suspiria was one of the ones that was immediately like I was taken by the look of it. I had never seen anything like the color palette that's in that movie. So that was like one of my like super memorable ones. And also even like the Godzilla movies, like I had a copy of Godzilla versus Monster Zero, which is one of the really kind of hokey ones because it's got all those weird aliens that got the like weird like pseudo faux leather suits with like the helmet with like the antenna sticking up out of it. And it's pretty cheesy. I mean, but those films, just the level of enjoyable stuff on that is off the charts. And Mystery Science Theater 3000 introduced me to a ton of bad movies that I never would have thought about otherwise, too.
You and John are kind of melded minds at this point. Like the last couple,
don't tell him that because it'll upset him and he'll uproot his entire life as soon as he figures that out.
I'm pretty grounded, though.
He's much better at it than I am.
How so?
Explain.
Well, like I love a lot of the things you brought up. Like Godzilla was like, and really my gateway to a lot of the cult movies that I love was my older brother. And he threw me on the Ultraman, threw me onto Godzilla, and then Mystery Science Theater was something that I would watch every single Saturday. I actually watch it now as much as possible, especially since they brought it back on the Netflix. And those movies were just so much fun. For sometimes they were good, sometimes they were just terrible, and something you can just chuckle with and you can find the great jokes with. And there's a simplicity to them just for those reasons that make them so much more enjoyable than like any other movie.
I loved when Mystery Science Theater would cover the, like, they would, like, there was the Mitchell episode that, like, opened my world to, like, bad action films from the 70s that I'd never really seen before. Now, like, I eat that shit up now. It's like, because it's just, like, you could just consume it so easily because all those movies are, like, between, like, an hour and 25 minutes and, like, you don't have to have any type of attachment to them. So, like, it's tough. It's like, when we talked about cult films and we talk about, oh, like the cult of the whatever film, but like a lot of those films don't have a cult. They're just these weird, like bizarre movies that people will just like watch and go back to, but don't necessarily have like any type of lasting impression.
So what would you say have been the defining cult film or films in your life? Perhaps they changed how you view movies or independence in general. They changed something for you or define you, however you want to say it.
You know, stuff like for me at the end of the day, like horror is my main jam. So like stuff like Halloween is kind of one of the ones that, despite, you know, doing very well, obviously it's a series and has garnered a huge following over the years, but like the original Halloween is kind of one of the ones that did a really good job of like the quiet, loud thing, whereas like the first half of that movie is pretty quiet and then the final third of it is very loud. And I'm a big fan of slow burn stuff that just like takes a while to get where it's getting to, but when it does, it delivers. So that's like the one that one and Deep Red's another one that's good like that, which was one of my later Italian finds. Took me a little, because like now you get everything, but you got to think back even like 10 years ago, like Blu-ray wasn't really a thing. You had DVDs and like companies were trying to acquire stuff, but they didn't have the like assets now to be able to acquire a good 35 millimeter print and do a 4K scan of it. So like there was a lot of stuff that just wasn't available, which is where the internet kind of came in, when people would, you know, you'd find stuff on the internet, because a big part of the documentary is about torrenting and stuff. And like, I'm not necessarily a full-on advocate of it, but I understand its place. And there's been countless movies now that I've discovered through torrenting because they're not available in any other way.
Wow. Amanda, what about you?
I remember my first one would probably have to be Poltergeist, because I was obsessed with that movie. If it, I feel like it qualifies, because there are people who are pretty crazy about it too.
Apparently, cult, it's whatever you define it as.
So yeah, I'm gonna say it does. And that also kind of opened my eyes to horror films and made me interested in finding more and led me into my obsession with Scream. Still is one of my favorite movies ever. And my top movie that I think has changed the way I look at movies that aren't great. They're not the best movie, but they're still my favorites. I can still have movies that aren't necessarily wonderful, but to me, they're an enjoyable experience. And that's where Boondock Saints comes in. That is my favorite movie. I know it's not the best movie that's ever been made, but it's something that I can go back to and I can enjoy time and time again. It's something that I can share with my friends, with my family. It's something that I can continue to quote, which I'm actually typically pretty horrible with remembering movie lines, but I know that entire movie front to back because I've watched it so many times, and it's something that never gets old for me.
All right, Johnny, what about you? What movies have defined you cult-wise?
I would have to say that my cult movies, they do nothing more than define the fact that I try to keep my mind open to all sorts of genres. Like when I think about the ones that I spent the most time with, there's a movie from 1979 called Prophecy, which monster bears that are mutated by mercury in the water, and it has to do with logging and all this other stuff. It's a great movie. I've seen it so many times, and then I switch over to like Remo Williams, another movie completely different but a lot of fun and enjoyable that a lot of people missed. And then more recently, I think of a movie like John Carter, which is something that I only gave a chance to because somebody said, hey, this is actually a decent movie. So to me, the idea of a cult movie is something that it reminds me to stay more open-minded to more movies in general, as opposed to just sticking to what the mainstream or what is really showing at the movie theater right now.
See, I had three that really define me in a big weird way. Evil Dead is the one people listening to the podcast are probably most familiar with, because that's just a movie. I don't know why it spoke to me so much, but it was just one of those things where I would sneak away with my friends to watch this movie that I'm not supposed to watch. And there's a lady getting humped by a tree, and there's blood everywhere, and there's about $8 for the budget involved. A lot of syrup being thrown left and right. And just for whatever reason, it horrified me at the time. It amazed me at the time. I loved that this was a horror movie that was taking chances with shots. The shots were not just static shots. I mean, he was all over the place with that camera. He made the woods become a character in the movie. It was a movie that really spoke to me in a lot of ways, like how people without money can make a movie and make it engaging and make the background part of the story. And that's what Evil Dead was to me. It really spoke to me a lot about filmmaking and what you can do with it. Sam Raimi, I think, is very unappreciated as a director. Then you've got Rocky Horror Picture Show, which I acknowledge is not a good movie. But I enjoy the hell out of it. And it's, in a weird way, I had a very open-minded mother, but I also, everyone else in our family was very closed-minded in a way, in terms of sexuality. Very religious upbringing. You know, my grandparent, my three of the people on my grandpa's side are preachers. So other than my mom, I didn't really have a whole lot of people to have open-minded conversations about sexuality with. When I first saw Rocky Horror, because of the cult buzz, you know, people talking about it, I was shocked mostly. You know, I'm like, what is all this stuff? What does he do? What's freaking what? You know, everything he was doing was so against so many of the things I was familiar with that it took me by surprise, and also it in a way made me look at things a little bit more open-minded, because, you know, each character is kind of going through their own little arc, and I know it's a weird little movie, but there's a lot of stuff about characters and growing and trying new things and being sexually open and that sort of thing. And it just became something of a fascination to me, and it really opened my mind in that respect. And then Clerks.
Yes.
Clerks is a huge one, because that was a movie that came along where you had a guy that, you know, spoke to me as, this is one of us that made it, in a way. It's one of, you know, it's like the Johns, the Amandas, the Bills, the Aarons of the world that are obsessed with film. And we know we can write something. We know we can make something. Some of us actually made a documentary and the rest of us didn't. You know, we know we can do it, but we just haven't done it. And here's a guy who, as much as I give him grief for some of his work currently, Kevin Smith made that movie. He wrote it. He made it happen. and it's enjoyable as hell. There's so many lines that were that click, that fly. It's given me friendships over the years. It's just a movie that really spoke to me on multiple levels, but not the least of which was, we can do it. Any of us that are listening to this podcast that want to make a movie can do it. And that was the first time I really felt like that was the case, was that movie. So that's funny.
Damn good movie, too.
Yeah. And Bill, here's where you get to hear us ramble real quick. We have we always post the topic in our Facebook group. So we're each, all three of us are going to read a couple of the selections. And you can shoot us down if you think any of these don't qualify as cult movies.
Or, oh, I will.
Or if you want to add to it. Amanda, you go first.
All right. So Adam Smith says, I would say a cult movie is one that may not appeal to a wide audience, but have a particular niche. Is it niche?
Niche.
However you say it.
Niche.
That they are popular with. My favorites are The Warriors and Boondock Saints.
Oh, well, I guess I wonder why you picked that.
Reese Bennett said American Psycho, Army of Darkness, Barbarella, Big Lebowski, Black Dynamite, Clerks, yeah, everyone knows it now, but not initially. Donnie Darko, Big Trouble in Little China, The Fly, They Live. I think a film that resonates with cinephiles and influences the next generation of filmmakers, one that's not initially a box office success, but does well on media sales downloads, one that's constantly referred to and talked about, that's a cult classic.
He brought up Black Dynamite, which is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. If you are familiar with a lot of blaxploitation films, because they take a number of scenes and plot points directly out of other blaxploitation flicks, but you can tell that it was made with a real good understanding of that subgenre. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend Black Dynamite. I've never seen it. And Michael Jai White is friggin' brilliant in it.
That's one of those movies where it's the opposite of a Wayans attempt at this right? kind of humor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they take it seriously, like they care.
Yeah, they appreciate the art, not just make fun of it.
Right.
And then we have Jen Sansevier, who said, Clerks. It was the little movie that could, filmed in my backyard, basically. But it was so representative of the early 90s, not just in New Jersey, but small town anywhere USA. It spawned other movies down the road, including Kevin Smith's career. Without Clerks, I don't think you have that wave of angsty 90s flicks like Chasing Amy and Mallrats.
See, I'm partial to Mallrats, actually. Oh, I love Clerks, but there's something about Mallrats that I just like. I will always, because I'm not really a big Kevin Smith fan in general. Mm-hmm. It's really just Clerks and Mallrats are really the only two that I can kind of go back to. But because Mallrats was like panned universally by like everybody, not even just critics, like film goers were like, oh, Clerks was awesome, but Mallrats sucks. I'm like, I actually think Mallrats is like funnier in a lot of ways.
You want a chocolate pretzel?
You see me stink palm that guy?
My brother used to make me watch that movie with him religiously. It's funny. We were not supposed to watch Kevin Smith movies, really.
That's understandable.
With my mom, because she didn't even like you watching like later on Final Destination because that was scary, or The Crow. My God, I had a hoodie that was thrown away because it was not. That's inappropriate and too dark. But
you take this back to Hot Topic now, little
that's
lady.
That's exactly where I got it, too. Saved up my money and spent $50 on that Hot Topic hoodie. And then I came back and it was gone. But my brother used to make me watch Mallrats. So I can understand why some people are hesitant on it, because there's a lot of parts to it that are just like, why? Dear God, who made this? But overall, once you actually have, I think you have to enjoy it with somebody. It's one of those that you're not, at least for me, I didn't enjoy it watching it alone. I had to watch it with my brother.
I like it alone. Dogma's more my favorite, too. Though. I love Dogma. Dogma.
Just because Mallrats is great because you can go back and see young Ben Affleck. So it's like that scene where they're showing the footage of him and the girl and he's like, who's your favorite new kid? Call me Joey. Please don't go girl.
You know what's sad is now they're not even friends anymore.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. I guess Affleck got too big, or Kevin Smith got too big for a time. I don't know.
It's Affleck got too big, as well. At least the way it sounds like from Kevin. It sounds like they're friends, but just very distant at this point.
I think he said he hadn't talked to him in like 4 years. That's not really close.
That's distant. But like, but when it's
very distant,
But when Affleck was making, what was that? Not Fargo. The other one.
The Town?
Nope, the other one.
Bill's answer for everything.
Argo.
The Town?
Argo.
Yeah.
When he was making Argo, like, so when Kevin Smith made Red State, he showed it to Ben Affleck, and he was like, well, what'd you think? And Ben Affleck never got back to him. And then, like, the entire cast of Red State shows up in Argo. And finally, he gets a hold of Affleck, and he's like, hey, so, you, like, here's my cast, and you never told me what you thought about my movie. He's like, I used your cast. What else do you want me to tell you?
All right.
They both seem like they could be kind of a-holes to have to deal with.
Agreed. I think Kevin Smith's a little full of his geek cred at this point, but I still, you know, I won't watch his movies anymore until I know for sure he makes a good one. But
did you watch that fucking Walrus movie he made?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
I love it.
Oh, shut up. Please don't go, girl.
God. Did you have any more, Amanda?
No, I'm just sitting here thinking about how similar Bill and Johnny seem to be. Like, listening to them talk about different movies as we've gone
along. It's like evil twin syndrome.
Yeah. All right, John, what listener picks did you have?
All right, so Brandon Lloyd says, love me some Lost Boys.
Is it? Would you say that's a cult movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Well, apparently, I do not know what a cult movie is. This is like the fourth time I've been wrong. So I'm just going to assume my version of cult movie is not what the rest of the world sees.
I would say The Crow is as well, since we mentioned that one a little bit ago.
Yep.
Agree. We didn't. You did. You and your shitty Hot Topic jacket.
Yeah. Well, it was a pretty great jacket, honestly. It was great.
Can I go now?
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Can I keep going? Or are we just going to keep on talking about Hot Topic and like your shitty jacket?
It wasn't shitty.
We could talk about shitty Hot Topic in general.
We could do that.
All right. Jennifer Maloney says, the first one that came to mind was Fight Club. Tanked at the box office, but became more of a hit after the fact. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about Fight Club was the...
We're not supposed to talk about it.
It's the first rule, yeah. Johnny.
God.
These guys were inescapable when the movie came out. Like, the guys who love this movie, they were everywhere. Like, my friends were all over the place talking about how great this movie was. They're starting to punch each other. Like, I didn't get it.
Yeah. I'm like, if you're going to do a trick ending thing, Usual Suspects was way better, and it was a very similar time. So that's what I'll reference.
I think they tricked.
It was Kevin Spacey, though, so we can't talk about it.
It's true. It's banned.
I watched
Peter Dennis says, okay. You would have to say The Room is the ultimate cult movie. I've never experienced anything like that at the cinema. So going on what he says, I think where he lives, they actually do like a Rocky Horror Picture Show sort of thing with The Room.
Oh, they do it all over the place. They do it here in Boston, too.
Do they really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, I think once a month they play it at midnight.
I'm going to have to take my wife to one of those because she's hysterical.
Yeah. Well, spend your money wisely. All right, Matt Barnes. He says, I think most cult movies tend to be box office failures. Their cult status has reached through word of mouth and the arena of home viewing. They have a touch of the fantastical about them. They're quirky and a bit outside the norm. Some of my favorites are The Reanimator. That's a good one. The Thing, Big Trouble in Little China, basically any John Carpenter movie. I would agree. I think he's the cult director, so to speak. Him and Argento. And Fright Night. And occasionally a cult movie can reach the status of classics like It's a Wonderful Life. That's an interesting... No, I mean, that movie was a huge bomb when it first came out. It was not a successful movie in the theater.
I think holiday films are kind of almost in their own thing because, like, I'm a huge, huge fan of Christmas Vacation. But, like, I would never look at it as a cult film, but I can understand why people would.
That's interesting. I would never have thought about that, but that's an interesting way to look at it. Brent Jones says, Tremors, aside from great dialogue and brilliant performances, it makes for a wonderful study in how to write a screenplay. The quote-unquote rules are established and adhered to for the creatures. All the setups pay off, and no Chekhov's gun goes unfired. Plus, it's just damn funny. Michael Gross and Reba McEntire are an absolute casting coup. I put this in cult because there are 100 reasons it shouldn't work, yet it does.
He makes a really good point about setting the rules and following them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that so many films just fail to do. Tremors, I agree. I think Tremors is a horribly underrated flick. Just the first one, though. The rest of them, forget it.
Yeah, those are exactly rated.
Right.
Yes. They read it correctly. Lastly, and I picked this one because I don't agree with him, but I respected his point of view. Tom Mayer says, The Big Lebowski is the one that comes to mind for me. I couldn't even pinpoint how many times I've seen it, enough that I know all the lines. I love quoting the movie to people in everyday situations whenever I can. And believe me, the looks I get shows me that not many people are as evolved as the dude. Yeah, I respect that he's that passionate about it, though. So that's
yeah. I don't want to hate on your listeners, man, but I feel okay. Okay.
I don't want to hate on
myself out of this hole.
Give me a second.
I don't want to hate on the listeners, but he's going to anyways.
No, I'm actually not. There's a lot of level. It's like movie fans in general. There's levels, and I feel like people that celebrate stuff like, you know, like The Big Lebowski or Fight Club are people that are, they're movie fans. They're absolutely movie fans, but it's not necessarily the deep level digging that some others will do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you get to Big Lebowski, you get to Fight Club, and you're like, yeah, this is great for me. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like everyone likes what they like because they like it. You know what I mean? It's not like nobody, I can't tell somebody that you like that movie, so you're wrong. Like that, no, if you enjoy it, you enjoy it. But I feel like there's like levels of like when you ask someone what a cult movie is, and their responses are based on how deep they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And stopping at, you know, or not necessarily stopping, but like digging till you get to Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is totally fine. But I'm the type of person where I want to dig deeper, and I'm going to dig till I get to Mardi Gras Massacre.
Hmm. Okay. I see where you're coming from on this.
You know what I mean? That's not, and I'm sorry if that comes off like no, it is. It's absolutely not meant to, I swear.
It comes across more as if it's just the surface level where it's just lines, to you, that's not as passionate a love.
Right.
In a way.
Look at it. I can equate it to sports. It's like you watch the Patriots games on Sundays, but you don't watch any other football. So you're a Patriots fan. You're not a football fan.
Oh.
Ooh. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But that's my mom. My mom doesn't watch anything other than the local sports teams, but she'll watch them every single week. But like, I'll watch the Bruins, but I'll also watch any NHL game that's on because I love hockey.
Okay. I see where you're coming from. I like how you insult the listeners. I like it.
It was very respectful.
I insult them in the most polite way possible.
Appreciate it.
And I also just outed myself as a Patriots fan, so I'm probably in trouble for that too.
Well good, because you're going to win for like the 47th time. So here's my question as we close this out, Bill. Tell people where they can find your movie. Tell people about your movie and where they can find it, when they can find it.
They can't find it.
Okay. Well.
No, it's we world premiered it last summer, and we played a whole bunch of festivals and conventions and stuff through the summer and the fall of last year. Won a bunch of awards, which was very nice and unexpected. And we've been kind of getting everything ready for a Blu-ray release for the spring. So there will be a pre-order. We're going to do an Indiegogo pre-order. And what we're doing different than a lot of other people do with Indiegogo is the movie is all done. We're going to use Indiegogo to fund the Blu-ray release of it. It's not one of those like, if we don't get the money, we can't make the movie because it's done. So
it's just to help you get the movie out there.
Yeah, exactly. Because we looked at a number of different deals and talked to some distributors, and we decided that like we really just feel that putting it out ourselves is going to be the best avenue, because we can directly put it into the hands of the people that want it, and they're not going to have to wait 2 years for a distributor to get around to putting it out. So I don't have exact details for you, but it should be early, April timeframe is what we're shooting for, but we're going to have a whole bunch of collector's packages that we'll put together. We'll have like t-shirts and posters and Blu-rays and DVDs. And
do you have a web address?
We do. You can go to survivalthefilmfreaks.com, but I don't update it. Our Facebook page is actually the best place. So if you just search Survival of the Film Freaks on Facebook, that's always updated. And you can also follow everything on Twitter and on Instagram at Film Freaks Movie. And my co-director Kyle and I both work on all that stuff, so we're always around. So if people have questions, feel free to shoot them over. But there's trailers and everything available, and a whole bunch. We did a whole bunch of little short clip things that we released on YouTube with all the people, not all of, but like a lot of the stars that were in it, like Ted Raimi and Lloyd Kaufman, Adam Green, Joe Bob Briggs. We got all kinds of little things for that. But we're excited about it. It did well, and we've got a lot of people that are looking forward to it. So we're hoping to just kind of spread that knowledge out as far as we can.
Excellent, man.
Keep us posted so we can share it.
Congratulations.
Will do. Yeah, thank you very much. We're excited about it.
You can also find him on Outside the Cinema. That's his podcast.
Yes, all cult movie. You want to talk about like those dark corners of cult movies, Outside the Cinema is the place to go.
Thanks again, Bill, for coming by. That's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. It's time to wrap this puppy up. We are headed out. Whew. Come back next week. We'll have more stuff. I don't even know what the topic's going to be next week.
I should have stretched before this episode.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. Me too. You can comment on this episode on our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn, our site at TheHollywoodOutsider.com, or our email is feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. You can subscribe to our Android app, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, review us on Apple Podcasts, or whatever app you use. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws. Amanda's on Smirk and Veronica's Marshmallows, and me and my other podcast, Smirk and the Blacklist Exposed. And remember, guys, the next time you head to a theater or sit comfortably on your couch and watch an awesome cult film, buy popcorn. And a little later, we are going to be joined by Bill Fulkerson, who's a documentary filmmaker and also a podcaster. And he's going to join us as we talk about cult films. I think that's going to be really cool. The most popular topic we've had in a long time. Let me try that again, because somebody's getting phone calls.
How about now? Is this any better now?
Yeah, it's a little better, yeah.
Okay, because I'm messing with like the qualities.
Leave it there, it's fine.
Is it good?
We'll talk real quick.
Okay, well, what I was doing was, for whatever reason, it was set to telephone quality recording.
So what is it now?
It's now set to DVD quality.
Is there a better option?
Is there a Blu-ray?
Do you want me to record an audition or no?
No, I'm just because otherwise it's going to take way too long because we're going.
Fine.
I'm just not going to do it, goddammit.
Okay, you know what? Hey, why don't you not do it?
I'm going to not okay? do it. Amanda, are you good?
Yeah.
Don't make me shake my wiener at you.
What?
I don't want to know what that meant.
Moving on up.
Is that the Jeffersons?
To the top.
I don't know what you're doing, but it's kind of freaking me out.
I'm having fun, motherfucker.
Stop. Breathe, man. I swear to God, I don't have all night to edit. Breathe. Try again. That's like, I have 8 edits and they're all John right now. So breathe. Thank you. Try again.
I'm just so excited to do a regular show right now.
I'm not doing a Brian podcast. I'm not doing it. So
he cut this shit short real quick.
He'd be like, John's going to listen and be like, I didn't hear myself say one goddamn thing.